So, what's on your mind? Just a couple of days ago, a young man in the sophomore class of my college came to my office for a listening ear. He told me that he thought I could help him through the morass of decision-making and choices he had to make in his college life. I heard a great deal of his story and sat in wonderment as he maintained his well-rehearsed mantra. I don't make good decisions, and the things that are rough and difficult in my family are all my fault. He told me about being the oldest of five siblings in a family that migrated to the States from a very poor community on one of the Caribbean islands. He's the first person in his family to attend college. He is doing well as an economics major and matriculating successfully in one of the United States' top 25 liberal arts colleges. The rest of the conversation had me frowning. Not a good facial composition for someone who's supposed to be a caring, pastoral, and understanding person. But I was frowning simply because I could not, really cannot understand why someone so young and healthy and full of life and possibility could hold in his life so much frustration and worry, as the text says, anxiety, as the earlier versions call it. With every question about what might be, he responded to negative results. This is my fault. With every question that suggested a possibility or a choice came the response, I do not make good choices. We sat for an hour with me mostly listening, with him speaking very fast about all in his life and world that was wrong and ill-conceived. He thought that everything that was a possibility for him would most likely be a detriment to his family. I heard him, I listened to him, but all I could feel or experience in this deeply moving narrative was a combination of sadness and confusion. I was sad because here was a person who had overcome all of the odds, and for all intent and purpose, he was making it. But that was not enough for him. Loneliness, confusion, anxiety, and worry rule this young man's every moment. Later, the same evening, while seeking counsel from a friend who is a chaplain at another liberal arts college on the Eastern Seaboard, I heard the story of another young man, first in his family to attend college, supported by a generous scholarship, and basically abandoned by his relatives who simply could not allow his success or invest in his future, and thus created a set of complex circumstances such that he dropped out of college and returned home, homeless, to Philadelphia, unable to fully engage his education. What is on my mind is the inescapable, vicious, creeping, debilitating, infectious disease of anxiety. It eats us and our relationships and our hopes and our work and our future. How is it that young people in the first generation of life must mask possibility and hope with fear and anxiety? This is what's on my mind. I cannot stop thinking about how far we have come as a country and a culture in the last 40 years. I can't help but think that what a good deal of progress we have packed up tons of weariness and worries and stress to accompany a world of good and futures of promise, especially in the educational environment for so many young people. But really, in the last couple of days, these stories have come in a volume of narratives that I just can't get out of my mind. Our text this morning is just about my favorite lesson from the Apostle Paul. It is familiar and comforting. It is the kind of poetic biblical language that is what I call a faith refresher. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. It's bright and hopeful and reminds me of a song we used to sing at church camp years ago, over and over, until everyone had to smile. Then comes an amazing reminder in the midst of our rejoicing, have no anxiety about anything. Anxiety, the word, the worry, the psychological drag down is not new. We remember in this text that the early church had troubles. Paul is writing to one of his most beloved communities, one that was struggling with issues. We don't really know what they were. But Paul wants to send the message that anxiety is not the work of a faith community. We do not choose to be in Christian community to make things harder or to create problems or to incite disgruntlement. The Philippians and all of us choose to be among the followers of a leader, Jesus, whose idea was that people working together and caring for one another make life a better place to be. The good news is that struggle and anxiety are meant to take a backseat to the messiness of being human and cranky. Paul wants his friends to chill out. Pray instead of getting out of sorts. Keep your time and energy, he seems to be saying, on things that matter. Anxiety eats at you. Prayer and thanksgiving are the acts that set us in the mind of God. Give thanks, Paul says. Pray. Do not worry. Do not be anxious. Now, those of us who are citizens of the 20th and 21st centuries think that we invented anxiety. It came to us, I believe, as a product of the industrial age. Now, in the 21st century, anxiety partners with technology, expectations, perfections, and success. We own it. But the age-old wisdom of the text reminds us that anxiety and worry is a result of living in community with people and issues and challenges and problems to solve. It is a thing that we as humans do. Paul wants his beloved Philippians to find a solution to the common squabbles and challenges of holding things together. His admonishment is gentle but direct. Rejoice in the Lord and do away with worry. Replace it with prayer and thanksgiving. Paul is writing from prison while the Philippians are living together in community producing angst. Here is another one of the ancient, traditional places where the captured prisoner dispenses sage advice from behind prison bars. Rejoice in the Lord always, he says. And again, I say, rejoice. Rejoicing is not really an activity that we expect as normative from the captive political prisoner. But for ages and centuries, think about it. Time after time, the wisdom of the faithful servant locked up for issues of faith has kept us alert to our blessings and our possibilities. This idea has been on my mind a lot too lately. Young people have been in prison. They've been in the news. Amanda Knox in Europe, Shane Bauer, Josh Fatal, and Sarah Shore in Iran. Their anxiety must have been palpable, and yet in these cases, we have seen the kind of strength that should make all of us take stock of what makes for anxiety. I know I have. These young people have been on my mind because life in a physical prison makes for real anxiety. Yet we find the need to make our lives as spiritual people in a spiritual prison, making up things to be anxious about. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. Maybe it takes a disaster for people to give thanks with prayer. A hurricane or a flood or a raging countywide fire seem to make the victims take stock. But Paul wants us to think about prayer and rejoicing, thanksgiving, and an undergirding faith in God as a way of life. Not just in disastrous times, but in all of life. All of the time. So this is on my mind. All the time. How to make the best of a good life. Now Paul pushes just a little beyond the challenges of seeking joy over worry and anxiety. He actually writes a short script telling us just what to think about. And I quote, Finally, whatever is good, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think on these things. So here we are, living safely outside of physical prisons, surrounded by possibilities and creativity, beautiful faces and spaces, books and art, and amazing music. Not only is there anything lovely, everything is lovely. Think on these things. The economy, politics, the environment, and all of these big picture horrors of the real world, they need our best, most hopeful, helpful, thankful, giving selves. Relationships and families, taxes and bills, bad attitudes at work, and big problems with the plumbing at home, they're all a part of the way we live. Anxiety and worry produces indigestion. Prayer and thanksgiving provide perspective, renewal, a dose of reality, the blessing of possibility, and I would even suggest maybe even some solutions. So I'm thinking that Paul is giving us God's blueprint for our spiritual residence, a place for stopping and thinking, reflecting and rearranging, tidying up the excesses, and playing the life game board with the most expressive pieces for life: goodness and honor, loveliness and purity, whatever is gracious and whatever is worthy of praise. Move those things around and see what happens. My student, who is consumed with anxiety and worry and focused on the impossibility of his life goals, is part of my job. I have to listen to him and care for him and care with him, and at the same time learn from him that worry and anxiety fuel fear and disconnection. It is my job to walk along with him and provide some perspective and a good amount of affirmation and some prayer. This is hard work and is what I signed up to do. And my relationships and the larger community are a part of my life as well. Like Paul's faith family and the community of Philippi, there are people with struggles who need to encounter the peace of God and the strength of faith that comes with prayer and thanksgiving and good thoughts, good thinking. This is also a part of my job, and my job as a faithful member of Christian community. So, for my co-worker in the chapel at Connecticut College, who is leaving our ministry after 33 years, reassigned by his diocese, I will think of his worth and his excellence and give thanks and praise for a generation and a half of ministry. For my colleague, a program director at our college, who recently lost her nephew to brain cancer and a former student to a violent death in a matter of only 60 days, I will think of her need to encounter the peace of God and pray with thanksgiving for these young lives who gave her such great joy. And for my best friend, whose 51-week-old grandbaby had surgery this past week and came out of the operating room able to breathe with ease and to really hear for the first time in his little life, I give thanks with all my heart for this little one, whose unconditional love is a pure and lovely gift for his mother and grandmother, for now and for a long time to come. I will think on these things with prayer and thanksgiving. So, what's on your mind? Let us pray. Creator God, say to us again, have no anxiety about anything, but pray in all the days of life that are granted to us, in the midst of the usual and the unusual, the challenges and the successes, say to us, rejoice and give thanks. And give us, great God, the peace we know we will find in prayer and thanksgiving in every day that is your gift to each of us. Amen.